You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
Oh my God. Good morning, everybody. Good day. Good night. I don't even know what time it is, but I'm really excited to have you here today. We are with my very dear friend, my favorite musical theater star, and probably one of the coolest chicks I've ever got to work with, Barrett Wilbert Weed. Hello, Barrett.
Hi, Eva. I'm your favorite?
I think so.
That's so nice.
I think so.
I think you're my favorite producer, so fair is fair.
Thanks, friend. I'm making real realizations here in quarantine, and I'm just going with my emotions, and I'm so excited to talk to you.
I'm excited to talk to you, too. I miss you.
I missed you as well. I got to ask, girl, where are you? How are you? Tell me about things.
Okay. So I'm at my mom's house in Massachusetts in Cambridge.
So are you taking this moment to discover old artifacts in that old bedroom closet? Like, are you digging up photos and letters and, you know, notes 100%. You wrote?
Oh, 100%. Yes. So I have found all of my diaries, like my childhood diaries, and some of them are hilarious. Like, ever since I was a child, I've had this thing where, like, somebody will give me a diary or a notebook or a journal as a present, and I'll get like 2 pages in, and then I'll immediately buy another one and be like, no, I like this one better. This is the one. And so I have all these diaries from childhood that are like 3 pages long and then totally blank. And it's just like, oh, cool. So I've always been like this. But yeah, I found all my letters I kept. I have all these sweet little, it's been great for my memory of my childhood because I keep finding all these sweet little like love notes from like little boys who I didn't really realize, I guess, had crushes on me. And in my memory, I was like never loved and nobody thought I was cute ever. And then I'm finding all these letters like, oh, well, clearly that's not true. But I also have found my entire stash of playbills from when I was growing up. So I saved every single one when I was a kid. I don't do that so much anymore, but
So did I.
Yes. So I have some like mint condition, like really well preserved like playbills that could probably be sold as like collector's items at this point.
Oh my God. That's amazing. That's amazing. Barrett, what's so amazing about talking to you right now, in addition to every reason, is this whole podcast, of course, is about nostalgia, and it's about our beginnings, and it's about what made us the theater lovers that we became as adults. And you're in your childhood bedroom right now. So it's kind of perfect.
Wild. Oh, actually, yeah, before I painted, I was taking things off the wall and I had to like pry this like old this really, really old poster of Sutton Foster in Little Women off the wall, and it had like fully stained the wall. Like I just taped it up there with like scotch tape.
Oh my God. Oh my God. I think you should, whatever little pieces it broke into when you had to pull it off, you should photograph and send to her.
Probably. Just like just dust, just Sutton Foster turning to dust in my hands.
Well, I think you know this. On my first show, we always talk through four questions, the same four questions every guest, but of course it leads to different answers, different conversations. And the first question is, what was the first show you ever saw?
Oh my goodness. Okay. Well, it's kind of like a trick answer because I remember the first trip I took to New York City. I think I was about 8 or something. I was like really little, and my mom took me, and we went with my two best little girlfriends and their moms. And the whole plan was that we were all going to go see Beauty and the Beast together. But I think since mom and I got there a day early, technically the first show that I ever saw was The Scarlet Pimpernel.
Oh no.
But I don't remember anything about it other than someone got guillotined and I was like, how did they do that? Like it really looked like an actor really put their head in the guillotine and then they really brought the guillotine down, but then he wasn't dead and it wasn't his head. And I still don't know how they do that.
Theater magic.
Theater magic. But that's what I remember. I couldn't tell you the plot of The Scarlet Pimpernel now. Like,
honey,
I haven't.
Honey, no one can. No.
Maybe that's why. But technically that's the version no one can. Oh, I love you.
And were you so bummed that that was not Beauty and the Beast, or you sort of got it and were accepting of a Broadway show?
That was like, okay, so we ended up going to see Beauty and the Beast the next day, but it was just because we got there the day before that my mom was like, well, let's go get like half price tickets for something else since we have like the night free, and that's what we got tickets for. So that's what we saw. But what I do remember is my trip to go see Beauty and the Beast, which I'm going to tell you about because I have the playbill right now that was perfectly preserved in my childhood bedroom. It literally looks like I just got it. So yes, I remember going to see, and it also has, there were some understudies on that day. So also the little understudy slips are in here. let's see what year that was. Okay. This says it's 1996. So that was when I went to go see Beauty and the Beast. Wow. And I remember it was awesome. And it's an amazing show. I mean, Beauty and the Beast is it's so beautiful. And I think that was like that was kind of like the advent of Disney, like being a major force in musical theater, you know, for better or for worse, but Beauty and the Beast was amazing. And I also remember that really well because my cousin, she was more like an aunt to me, but she's my mom's cousin. And she has since passed away. She had a bunch of kind of degenerative, that's a hard word to say, illnesses, which really sucked. But she was a Broadway actress all through the 70s and the early 80s. And she was in the original casts of Nine and Grease and Grand Hotel. And she did the Tony performance for Nine. She was the original Sarahina. And so she did the Italian on the Tonys that year. Her name's Kathy Moss, and we actually look a lot alike. Like, if you actually pull up a photo of her, like, we have, like, pretty much the same face. She had a much more, like, womanly body than I do. Like, she's, like, very voluptuous and, like, curvy. Wow. And had, like, the butt that I wish that I had. But, like, and also like amazing boobs. I just like, I'm like, wow, what is it like to look like an adult? So she was excited that my mom and I were starting to get into theater, and that specifically like I was starting to get into theater as a little kid. And so whenever we'd make these trips to New York, she'd try to make them really special. And she knew the guy who was playing the Beast, and his name is escaping me right now, so I'm gonna flip through this playbill. But
let's take that trip down memory lane in real time, please.
Thank you.
Yes.
Jeff McCarthy was the Beast. So she knew Jeff McCarthy, and she arranged for him to take us backstage, and she also arranged for him to put on kind of like there was like the actual Beast makeup that was like the prosthetic stuff or whatever. And then I have this memory that there was like another Beast head that was like I don't know if it was a joke, like if it was just something they had backstage.
It was backup in case something went wrong.
Maybe. I don't know, but it was kind of like the Disney Park version of the head. And I remember he came around the corner and was like, "Nice to meet you," like in this voice, and then took the Beast head off, and I just like burst into tears. Oh, and like threw it, like was just like terrified, like screaming, and was like, and I think my friend was there too, and we were both like, ah! Just like these little girls, like terrified of like this character head coming off. And he was like, "Oh no, I'm sorry.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
My God." And, you were traumatized by the Beast revealing he's a man rather than the man revealing he's a beast.
Yeah, which in retrospect is super messed up. Like, it's supposed to be the other way around.
Wow.
But there are some really cool people in this original cast who clearly it was like, you know, their early career as I'm looking at this cast list. Wow, can't talk. And it's like, it's pretty amazing to see, like, Mark Kudish is in the ensemble. Andrew Keenan Bolger is also in the ensemble.
What?
Yeah. Andrea Burns, the ensemble. Who else? I mean, I'm sure everyone was fantastic, but yeah, those are the ones I'm recognizing. But most importantly, guess who was Belle? Carrie freaking Butler.
Really?
Yes. And who was my dressing roommate in Mean Girls?
Oh my God.
Isn't that the best? Yeah, I keep forgetting to send her this because I found it right when I got to my mom's house and I was like, I have to send this to Carrie. Like, that is wild.
You have to send it today.
But I do. I remember she was fantastic. Like, obviously, Carrie's so, so talented and so charming and beautiful and all these wonderful things. But I do remember she was, like, adorable. And her little headshot is so cute. First of all, she is a brunette.
Of course. She had to be. Belle's a brunette.
She is so adorable. And she's, she's a brunette. She has bangs. And like a little sweet little bob haircut. And it's so funny because I only know Carrie as like, you know, the blonde, like kind of like petite bombshell character that, you know, she is today. But
that's how we all know her today. But
yeah,
she started as a brunette Belle.
Yeah, she has our hair color for sure.
That is amazing. What is amazing is, I mean, I have to believe that you had the pinch me moments throughout your growth and success and evolution as a Broadway actor, but did you have a memory at some point while being in a show with Carrie Butler that she had a formative experience? That she provided your formative experience?
No. We never had a moment where I was like, I bet you were who I saw in Beauty and the Beast. Like, nope. We talked about it and I was like, you know, that was like the first real show that I saw that I have like a real memory of. And she was like, well, I was, you know, in her sweet little voice, she was like, well, I was in that, you know, like, I don't know. I wonder if you saw me. I was in that in the 90s. That was one of my first jobs. And I probably did see you. But yeah, now I have the proof. I'm so glad that I held on to this playbill.
Oh, and also my God.
This cute baby little photo of Andrew Keenan Bolger is like hilarious. Like he, I don't think there's ever been a cuter kid. He has like a sweet little blonde bowl cut and that cute little nose that both he and Celia have.
Oh, I love that nose.
I know. And like, and he has sweet little like Dumbo ears. Like,
oh my God. Ears
come, like, from the side and like, just like he's wearing overalls, so cute. Oh my God, so freaking cute. But yeah, wild. And also I remember Jeff McCarthy being like chef's kiss, like amazing. And then I later saw him in Year in Town and was like, who's that? Like amazing.
Dude. I love this. This is why we do this podcast, because of the nostalgia of this moment and the fact that you are in your house and the fact that you are now realizing that it was Carrie Butler that you saw. My mind is blown a bit.
Yeah. Also, like I just flipped to her bio, and at this point in her career, it's super short. She has like this, I think this was her first big credit.
Wow.
Which is so fun. Wow. But yeah.
I love it. Next question.
Okay.
What was the first show you were ever in?
Oh my God. Okay. Ever in, well, I was in this kind of like off brand, like children's like community theater group. It was called the Boston Children's Opera, and I did it for like 6 years. But I started, you had to be old enough to read. And I remember I couldn't. So I think I was, we lied. And I think we said I was older than I was. I believe I was like 5. Because I'm like, when do kids start reading? Like, kind of like first grade, like kindergarten, first grade, I think.
Just depends on how pushy your mom is. That's how I determine it.
My mom has always been a moderate amount of pushy, like a moderate push. She's been very pushy with me, but a moderate amount of pushy, you know, with the people who were like in charge of caretaking for me. But yeah, let's see. So yeah, I was part of this this children's opera group.
Was it an actual opera that they did, or they just called it the Boston Children's Opera because they're pretentious in Boston?
I think that's mostly what it was. But yeah, so we did. I mean, technically they were operas. They were like kind of like fairy tale stories, like traditional fairy tale stories set to the tune of existing operas, but then the people who were putting them together wrote all these lyrics for songs, and every kid had to have a solo. So the operas were like 3 hours long. Like every single one, I think, was 3 hours long. Like I remember, like it took forever to rehearse, and I remember all the parents like in the back of the room with like, you know, that like the 90s like camcorders like set up in the back. Oh, and like,
of course,
and just like being, you know, having the patience of saints, watching these little kids do these operas. But yeah, but my first one was Sleeping Beauty, and I was a fairy in Sleeping Beauty. I believe I was 5. I think we got me like wings from this dollar store that we went to all the time called Benjamin Franklin. I believe we got me wings, and my mom was a professional artist, like visual artist for a long time. So she has all these like, just like obscenely incredible crafting skills. So I remember she made me a wand out of excess fabric and like beaded material. And she also made me, like a crown with a little tulle veil coming off the back. And we still have pictures of me in this outfit. It was like lit. Like I think all the other little girls were like, cool. Like what the fuck? Like Barrett's supposed to be like a little, like have like 2 lines and be a little fairy. And she like looks like $1 million.
My mom would have done the opposite. Like what is the opposite of everything you just described? I think it's a canvas bag. That would have been my costume.
No.
Yes. Not crafty. That's amazing. Did Kathy Moss come and see you in Sleeping Beauty?
No, definitely not. Okay. Definitely not. That was like, no. I don't know if Kathy ever came. Now that I'm thinking about it, because I think she was fairly ill for most of my life, and she wasn't working too much as an actor by the time I came into the picture, which I think was why she was so excited to, like, you know, facilitate these like special things.
How often do you think about her career influencing your career?
I don't know. I think about her influencing me as a person because she and my mom were so close. And when I tell you that this woman was hilarious, like, I mean, Kathy was like gut busting, like could make you like, she just had a gift for making people laugh. And so I think she impacted my sense of humor more than anything. Like, yeah. And also just like, you know, my mom's from Texas and, Kathy's from New Orleans, and this, it was just kind of this constant, sense of like, I don't know, like that
Southern charm.
Yeah. Southern charm. And also like, just like ridiculous levels of hospitality and storytelling. And like, yeah, Kathy was like an exceptional storyteller, like an exceptional entertainer, like more than anything. I think that was like her greatest skill, was like just anyone who ever met her was just like so like charmed by this woman. Like, she was a very magical person, and she's a very large kind of, I don't know, influence on my life in that way. Like, she was my favorite relative as a kid. Like, I just was like, when are we going to see Aunt Kathy? When can we see Aunt Kathy? And now, of course, like, I understand that, you know, when I was seeing her, she was really pulling it together for my benefit. Like, I really had no idea. Obviously, how can you when you're a kid know how much pain an adult is in? But yeah. So
yeah, I mean, my guess is if she influenced your life that much, that's how she influenced your career.
Yeah, definitely.
Through that way.
I think. I think comedy has always been like a huge connective force in my life. Like, that is the number one way that I connect with people, is like, you know, if we have a shared, I think that's why you and I get along so well, like if we have a shared sense of like what is weird and what is funny, like that makes me want to be around people. And it also is like the number one way that I can tell if someone's gonna you know, allow me to be understood, like in any situation. I think it's also like a really good barometer for intelligence, because like I'm of the mindset that all humans are created equally intelligent. We just exhibit that in different ways. And I think comedy is like is how I can tell if I'm on the same intelligence spectrum as someone else, and if we're going to be able to like connect and work together well, or have some kind of a friendship moving forward. You're a person whose jokes I always get, like, like the weird stories. I'm like, oh, please tell me more. Like, just
my jokes largely come from the dad joke ilk. So I appreciate that.
but that's what's funny about dad jokes. It's like, it's not that the joke is funny. It's the telling of the joke that's
exactly
funny.
Exactly.
The telling of the dad joke that's hilarious, because it proves that you have no ego when it comes to
that's right
being understood or received well.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater Get your tickets today at SuffsMusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
Barrett, tell us about, and this can be any example of a paid professional gig, not even an onstage one, but your very first paid professional show.
Yeah, I believe it was this festival show that I was actually the understudy in called Fucking Hipsters. That was literally the title of it. And John Carafa directed it. But the lead girl, she was also in a band and she was going on tour. And so there were two performances that she couldn't do. And so they hired me to take over for this girl. And the plot line was fairly interesting. It was kind of like, it was like, these people are roommates, but they're also in a band together. And the lead singer is in love with the pianist, who is me, but the pianist like doesn't know that and is also in love with him. But then the lead singer gets into a relationship with this like kind of random grifter type person who fakes a pregnancy, and very dramatic and, you know, like all this kind of stuff, all in an hour and a half.
Of course. And I'm guessing it was spelled F pound sign asterisk.
100%.
A-N hipsters. Got it.
But I had to play the piano in this show. And the conclusion that we came to for how this was going to work, since I didn't play the piano, was that they just unplugged the piano. when I was performing, and then, you know, obviously like someone in the pit was playing the piano, but
so there was someone's crew duty, which was to bend down and pull a plug out of a power socket.
I remember they were just like, oh, how are we gonna do this? And I was like, we're just gonna unplug the piano before the show. We're just going to unplug the keyboard. And they were like, what? And I was like, yeah. And then I just went around to the back of the piano and like had to like demo. Like, I was like, yeah, you're going to pull this out, roll this cord up, and then I'm going to give it to someone. And we're going to how we're going to do this. And they were like, well, but won't people be able to tell that it's not plugged in? And I was like, I don't think it matters. Like, right. Suspension of, you know.
Disbelief.
Like, come on, like, this is a festival show. But I only had one official rehearsal. And so Jared, my roommate, Jared Lofton, who is in a lot of my early New York stories, because we lived together for 5 years, he was like, okay, well, why don't you memorize everything, get all the blocking, and we will have rehearsals in our apartment, because we had a big living room. And so Jared, my sweet roommate, Jared would sit on the couch and he would basically just like read all of these parts with all different voices. And like, you know, he's a super talented guy. He would read all of these different characters with all these different voices. And I would just like basically do walkthroughs of this show in our apartment, like every night. Like, we did it like every night.
Oh my God. That was more attention that show got, probably, in its creative development than
150%. Yes. And then I went on and I did a good job. I don't think I didn't forget any of my lines. And
wow. Did you love that feeling? Yeah. Like, from that point on, you were like, yep, this feels right. I'm good. And I want to keep doing this. Was there some aha moment?
I mean, I have had many kind of like, you know, I don't ever want to refer to like someone's show that they, you know, wrote from their heart as like a practice, you know, swing for me. But that being said, you know, that show wasn't seen by that many people. And the next job I got after that show was Lysistrata Jones. And I think one of the reasons that they were willing to take a gamble on me understudying all those parts, because I understudied like four different women, unofficially five, I think. And I was like 22 and didn't know what the hell I was doing. And I think one of the reasons that they gave me that job was they were like, well, you just understudied someone in this like random like festival show this summer, so like at least you have like some understudy experience. And I remember asking me about it in the room, being like, how was that? And I was like, it was good. I just, you know, I rehearsed in my apartment every day, and then I had, you know, one kind of put in rehearsal, and I did it. And they were like, did it go okay? And I was like, yeah, to my knowledge, I didn't mess up anything, so that's good. But yeah, I think like there was a moment, you know, with that show where I was kind of like, okay, I can handle this. Like I can handle, like I did that, so I know I can handle that, so I can probably handle this. I was just glad to like to have a job. I think any job. I didn't care what it was. At least the first, you know, few months I was in New York, I was just like, just let me try.
yeah. I mean, who knew that people would pay you to do the thing you loved? Like that alone is a win.
Yeah. And also, you know, I couldn't get a job in summer stock work, like while I was in college, for like love or money. And then I came to New York and started doing a bunch of, you know, readings and little development projects and little festival shows and small stuff like right off the bat. And I was like, oh, okay, well, maybe I'll work here, when I couldn't really work in more kind of like mainstream consumption theater around the country. But
I can't get the lead in Me and My Girl at the Cornfield Community Players.
Yeah, I couldn't. I mean, I really couldn't. But it's also like, you know, when that's all you have, that's all you have access to, and you can't, that's what you're auditioning for, and they're like, no, like over and over and over again. You're like, well, I guess I'm never going to be Marion the Librarian in the music band. Like, what am I to do? Yeah, and then you come to New York and it's like, oh, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to do like only new work. Which, you know, it's hard to train students to have a career in new work when, you know, obviously when you don't know what that new work is going to be because it's new.
Right.
Yeah. So that was good. It was a good experience on the whole. But yeah, fucking hipsters for the win.
For the win. Barrett, if you could be in any show at any time, we're talking dream role here, what would it be?
I really want someone. I know that there was a musical of Pride and Prejudice at some point.
There was.
But I really want someone to make like a, you know, maybe I should like talk to some people about this. I really want someone to make kind of like not Spring Awakening, but, you know, that kind of like contemporary spin on like a really old antique piece. I want someone to make a version of Pride and Prejudice that's like that, because I would love to play Elizabeth Bennet. It's one of my favorite characters. She's so stubborn, and I love a stubborn girl, because I'm one myself.
I think it would be called Prejudice! Exclamation point.
Fucking Prejudice.
Fucking F pound sign asterisk N Prejudice. I love it. It's actually a pretty good idea. We should talk.
I know. Listen, I think I have like three really good ideas a year. And one of them is like an idea that's actually possible. That feels like pretty possible to me.
It does.
Yeah, some good orchestrations, some good bops. That would be good.
No, I love that. I love that. Is that like off Broadway? So it's like really grungy, or do you see that on the main stem?
I see that as like a public theater run, and then, you know, coming to Broadway for maybe like a limited run, but then everybody loves it, and so then it gets extended like that. One of those.
I love those.
You know, that's kind of, I mean, that's like the Spring Awakening journey, where people were like, what the fuck is this shit? And then people were like, oh, this is great. Like, let's keep this running, please.
I love when that happens. So we have a lightning round at the end of every episode. We don't tell you about it.
Okay.
Because, you know, I like to surprise.
Okay.
And what we do, and I love the we, right? The royal we. What I do, what I fucking do.
I'm part of this. I'm part of it. I'm here for it.
That's right. What we do is we put 30 seconds on the clock. Maybe we put a minute, depending on how well it's going. And I list off classic musicals, classic musical titles to you. And you, in a lightning round, word association way, list off the emotional theme. Okay, ready? Breathe in. Here we go.
Okay.
Children of Eden.
God.
Sweeney Todd.
Love.
Funny Girl.
Beauty.
My Fair Lady.
Bondage.
The Scarlet Pimpernel.
Big old question mark.
Hair.
Joy.
A Chorus Line.
Pain.
La Cage aux Folles.
Love.
The Last 5 years.
Confusion.
Falsettos.
Self-obsession.
Good. You did great.
Thank you.
I have to say, not everyone does great there. I get a lot of passes sometimes.
I think I've the Scarlet Pimpernel, I've seen it, but neither one of us know what it's about.
Not even a little. I think I for a long time I thought it was Pumpernickel, so I thought it had to do with a baby.
No.
Yep.
The Scarlet Pumpernickel?
Yep.
Wait, that's like, I mean, do you think like Hello Deli has like a sandwich that's the Scarlet Pumpernickel?
If they don't, they're gonna after they hear this episode.
What would that be? That would be like, if I owned like a kind of hipstery like sandwich shop, the Scarlet Pumpernickel would be like.
Oh, be easy. Like, pumpernickel bagel.
Yeah.
Salmon.
Yeah.
Cream cheese.
But maybe like a beet cream cheese.
Exactly. A beet cream cheese. Exactly. For the Scarlet. Yeah. Tomatoes.
A little bit of a dusting of like shredded carrots or like shredded apple or something.
I love it.
Has to be some kind of cheese that goes with a bunch of red stuff. Maybe a Munster?
I think a Munster. I think an orange hued Munster. Yeah. Oh my God. You, me, and the Scarlet Pimpernickel are going to be having lunch sometime soon, my friend. I love talking to you. Thank you for being with us today.
Oh, my pleasure. This was such a great way to start the day. Thanks for having me.
You're an utter delight. Thank you, everyone, for listening. My friend, Barrett Wilbert Weed, find her on Instagram. The rest of the world seem to. And have a wonderful day. My First Show is produced by Josh Altman, MEP, Dori Berenstein, and Alan Seals, and is part of the Broadway Podcast Network. This episode was edited by Derek Gunther. Special thanks to Leslie Papa and Whitney Holden-Gore at Vivacity Media Group. For more info about the podcast, visit bpn.fm/myfirstshow. Follow me on Instagram at Eva R. Price. Just a little change. Small to say the least, but the just the same, ever a surprise, ever as before, and ever just as
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.